The Spectator is searching for the UK's brightest entrepreneurs to enter the Spectator Economic Innovator of the Year Awards in partnership with Charles Stanley Wealth Managers. If you have a business that disrupts an existing market, a smart new way of doing things, or something that has incredible social impact, then apply by 1st of July at spectator.co.uk/innovator. Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Cindy Yu and I'm joined by Isabel Hardman and James Forsyth. So last night, The Sun went to press with a bombshell of a front page. Isabel, it's transpired that Matt Hancock, the health secretary, has been having an affair with one of his top aides. Can you tell us what's going on and what we know?
So The Sun splashes today on the revelations that Health Secretary Matt Hancock has been having an affair with Gina Colodangelo, who has been working as an unpaid advisor to him in the department and also has been a non-executive director on the Department of Health's board since last September, an appointment that was covered by, I think, the Sunday Times as quite a controversial choice. Now, I think generally on these podcasts, we tend to say that MPs' affairs are not that interesting. We don't tend to talk about MPs' sort of personal lives on these podcasts because we don't find them that interesting. But what is of note in this is that the affair has been taking place in the Department of Health. So The Sun has what appears to be CCTV footage of the pair in what the paper describes as regular clinches. These regular clinches also were taking place before hugs, or if you prefer, clinches were actually allowed under lockdown guidance. They apparently were, the footage dates from the 6th of May, so before hugs were allowed again. And she is the recipient of taxpayer money for the work that she has been doing for the department. And so this makes it a matter of public interest beyond just the sort of normal things that happen in Westminster, where, you know, Westminster is notorious for people's marriages breaking down and people having affairs with one another. But I think this does have a relevance that goes beyond the sort of Westminster gossip that we normally take a dim view of on this podcast.
James, so as Isabel says, there seems to be two problems here. One is that he potentially broke lockdown rules that he set out himself, and the second is the use of public money was involved as well. How much trouble could he be in?
I think generally, as Isabel says, the kind of public mores have shifted. You know, the fact that I think it's highly unlikely that Boris Johnson would sack someone for having an extramarital affair. But I think the biggest issue for the public will be the social distancing question. That it appears that this affair started at a time when the government was urging everyone to stay 2 metres apart from people. You know, Kate Andrews has a piece in this week's magazine about people feeling that there's kind of one rule for the kind of party elite and another rule for everybody else. And I think that at the same time as, and I think we had a piece actually from someone in the magazine about this, that people who are in relationships who didn't live together were technically not meant to be
in clinches.
Yes. That one of the people responsible for those regulations was, as this footage suggests, not keeping a safe distance apart from other people. It is, I think, going to cause a kind of public irritation and anger. And I think one of the odd things is that this pandemic has made everybody else's behaviour everyone else's business. It's one of the ways in which it's kind of flipped society upside down, which is, you know, the normal view that, you know, I'm just doing my thing, it's nobody else. You know, we've all got interest in other people's business, whether they, you know, should that person be out or should they be isolating? Are they keeping 2 metres apart? Are they wearing their face mask? All of these questions. So the kind of normal, I think it's one of the sadnesses actually of this pandemic, the normal view that people, you know, other people's business is other people's business has been eroded by this. And I mean, one of the problems with Matt Hancock is he has been one of the architects of that policy and one of the advocates that everyone must follow these rules. And so this is what will make this situation particularly difficult for him.
Isabel, people have resigned over breaking lockdown in public positions. This is not the first time we've been here. We had Neil Ferguson, then we had Scotland's Catherine Calderwood, obviously the infamous Dominic Cummings Rose Garden incident. But he didn't resign, that's true. So is Matt Hancock going to take a leaf out of the Dominic Cummings handbook and just, you know, stay on?
Well, here's hoping that he doesn't do a Rose Garden press conference on his regular clinches. I think we could all be spared that. But look, Matt Hancock's position is quite precarious anyway. If you talk to a lot of his ministerial colleagues, they're all expecting him to be reshuffled whenever it is that Boris Johnson decides to rearrange his top team. And I've been writing this week about the legislation that Hancock is about to introduce into the Commons, a new health and social care bill, which gives him more power. And I was talking to a minister the other day who said, well, yeah, but, you know, this could be a big concern, but Matt's not going to be around for much longer, so it's not an issue, which is the sort of working assumption in Westminster. Now, I don't know whether, in a weird way, as James said, Boris Johnson is highly unlikely to sack somebody for having an extramarital affair, perhaps even less so for having an extramarital affair with somebody who is linked in some way to taxpayers' money, given the sort of regular questions about his links with Jennifer Arcuri, for instance. So does this actually, in a way, make it harder, again, to sack Matt Hancock? I'm not sure, but it's not as though this is the first piece of damage that he has sustained as health secretary. We've had the totally hopeless line in those text messages that Dominic Cummings revealed. We've had the questions that Dominic Cummings also raised about Hancock's performance and his honesty around PPE and testing targets. And there's also, he's unpopular with a lot of Conservative MPs who are very cross about ongoing lockdown restrictions and who feel that he is very authoritarian. And so he doesn't have a huge amount of support within the party already, regardless of what is going on in his personal life.
And James, just a final question on Matt Hancock. If you were in an enviable position of being on Team Hancock this morning, what would your damage limitation moves be next?
Well, it's interesting. Labour put out a statement, and Labour are concentrating on the aspect of public money and this appointment to the board. I suspect that there is paperwork on that front. You know, there are processes that are gone through. And I think in some odd way, I suspect there'll be a certain relief that Labour aren't going for the hypocrisy social distancing point. Because I think that is harder for him to justify. Because I think the kind of the public money and the Ned appointment, you know, Colodangelo has a kind of professional background which makes it not, you can see the case for why this person was appointed. And if there is paperwork, he will be able to say, oh, look, there it is. It was all signed off by people. I think the social distancing point and the hypocrisy of that, I think, is actually a harder charge to rebut.
And Isabel, last night we also heard more about what our summer holidays might look like as the government published its green list. How is it looking?
Yeah, so more countries have been added to that, including Malta, Madeira, Barbados, Grenada, and a few others. And then we've had we've had Israel put onto the green watch list, which means that it could be taken off the green list at very short notice within the 3-week review period. And then to the red list was added Tunisia, Eritrea, and a couple of other, Uganda and a few others. So probably more moves than people within the travel sector were expecting. Also have Boris Johnson talking about the possibility that double-jabbed Brits could be able to travel opened up to them even more over the summer. This is partly a response to Angela Merkel's plan to get all EU countries to force all Brits to quarantine on arrival, which would obviously put an end to the British summer holiday abroad. I was actually, I spoke at a conference held by ABTA this week and was talking to a lot of people in the sector about how they feel the government has treated the travel sector. And it's really interesting, their frustration over the lack of transparency in the decision-making on these lists. Of course, we talked also about the confusion over what the amber list actually means and the fact that I don't think I'd get in a car with anyone from government now because none of them seem to know what an amber traffic light means. But there's also just the decision-making over which country goes on which list and the last-minute nature of it has really frustrated the sector because holidaymakers like to plan in advance and people are holding back from booking holidays because they're worried that even green list countries will suddenly disappear from that green list. And there's also, I think, an interesting cognitive disconnect in government that there's not that many people who've worked in the travel sector who are now in parliament, let alone in government. So they don't really understand how that world works and the impact of some of the decisions they've been making, as I say, at the last minute, on this massive international industry.
And as Kate Andrews says in her piece this week, ministers have been globetrotting for various sorts of reasons, whether it's COP26 or trade deals.
So. Yeah. And they also have this obsession with the staycation. It's an enduring thing that the British politicians have to pretend that they desperately want to go on a bucket and spade holiday by the sea. And Gordon Brown famously was the worst at this because he absolutely hated these bucket and spade holidays. And there were all these pictures of him just looking dead miserable on some British beach. You saw Matt Hancock earlier in the year talking about how much he was looking forward to his Cornish holiday, and lots of other British politicians talking about their staycations or whatever you want to call it too. But if you talk to MPs in those seats, so Tim Farron up in Cumbria or some of the Cornish MPs, they're actually pretty annoyed by this emphasis on the staycation because it's causing an explosion in second home purchases in their seats. And Tim Farron on Monday was talking in the planning debate about what he described rather colourfully as a Lakeland clearance that was taking place in his Cumbrian seat because of the number of holiday lets that are being bought and pricing people out of the local market. So there is a cost to this obsession of British politicians with staycations.
And James?
Yeah, I mean, there is an irony, which is there's been these, all the government talking about how double vaccinated people will be allowed to go to amberless countries and not have to quarantine on return. I wonder if the European Council taking place today is going to lead to Brits going to the EU having to quarantine. As I think as we said yesterday, one of Angela Merkel's concerns is that the British market is sufficiently, tourist market is sufficiently large that if you don't have a kind of common EU policy, you know, one country in the EU is going to say, and I think Spain is already kind of making noises to this effect, we're the place that you don't have to quarantine to if you come from Britain. And I think that there's particular concern among Angela Merkel following the European CDC's warning about the rise of Delta cases in Europe about more Brits coming.
And in what seems to be becoming quite a regular appearance, Fraser, you've turned up at the end and you want to comment on the Hancock incident.
I just want to... On the radio this morning, Grant Shapps was saying that it was a private affair. What people do in their private lives ought not to be a matter of public concern. And that is completely my instinct. When I heard about initially, I thought, well, that's a shame people's relationships go through difficult phases. But there's a big difference, though. I mean, this government's laws that Matt Hancock wrote and Grant Shapps voted for criminalised what we did in our private lives. They criminalised somebody to hug somebody else. They criminalised somebody to have sex with somebody else if they weren't living with them. Now, they didn't need to criminalise that. They could have given advice. They could have not sent the police after people sitting next to each other on park benches, which we saw, police intervening when two women have a cup of coffee with each other and go for a walk. And I think this is the problem. I think it was an absolute outrage that the government used the police and used the law to interfere with people's private lives during the pandemic. They should only have given guidance. And that's why it's a bit difficult now for Grant Shapps to say, well, this is a private matter of people's private lives. We've just been through a period where the government has legislated and criminalised all sorts of aspects of our private lives. There are many people not in a relationship who knew if they'd done what Matt Hancock did, they'd be breaking the laws which he wrote. Now, this is why it's politically a lot more difficult for us, because Matt Hancock was the one giving us guidance on how we should hug with caution. I mean, I remember when he said that, a bizarre thing for a government member to have to say. Why should we be given guidance by the government on how we should hug each other? So this is why I think something that I would ordinarily not be commenting on, because I find very little interest on the complications of ministers' private lives. But this simply demonstrates that we've been through a period where they did decide to politicise things that should never have been in the political realm in the first place. And that's why I think Matt Hancock is in more trouble than he would otherwise have been.
Fraser, James and Isabel, thanks very much.